Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's up, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs and leaders looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. In today's interview episode of Getting Work to Work, I talk with Tim Kelly, global change agent and author of True Purpose, 12 Strategies for Discovering the Difference You Are Meant to Make, about the importance of purpose for both individuals and organizations. In this fast-paced conversation, Tim shares why purpose matters, how it impacts more than just the bottom line, and how a really good purpose should make you nervous and downright cringe. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/242. Tim, welcome to Getting Work to Work. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are and the work that you do?
Thank you, Chris. Delighted to be here. Well, to put it simply, I'm trying to get work to work, but I'm doing it in several very specific ways. People ask me, what are you? Are you a coach? Are you a consultant? Are you this? And I do all of those things, but I'm resistant to job titles. So when they really insist, I say, well, global change agent. How about that? Global change agent, trying to transform the world of business. I'm primarily involved in two things, Chris. One is helping organizations and leaders find their higher purpose and then use that purpose to be A, more successful, and B, create positive change.
Wow.
We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. And the other thing that I am really involved in terms of getting, because to me, in terms of getting work to work, the absence of meaning, the absence of purpose, the absence of fulfillment is a major deficiency in how we work, right? Work has been framed as a necessary evil,
yes,
which people would avoid if they could, because they'd rather be doing something else more meaningful. And I think that's a very dangerous belief to hold, right? As opposed to seeing work as an opportunity to manifest your purpose and to get meaning out of life. The other thing I do is I work with organizations on organizing themselves non-hierarchically.
Nice.
And there are different forms for this, like self-organizing or whatever, or TEAL. So I've studied a lot of the different systems that are not inherently hierarchical, like holacracy or the collaborative operating system or sociocracy, these different kind of techniques. Because one of the things that doesn't work about work is that we use hierarchy for everything. Now, hierarchy is great. I was a commanding officer in the Navy. I am not someone who goes around dissing hierarchy. I think it's awesome. But like anything else, it's not designed to work for everything, right? So you can put screws into wood with a hammer. It's just not the best tool for the job.
No, it's not.
It's not. I mean, it's possible to do it that way. It just takes a lot longer. If you have a screwdriver, it's more efficient. It's faster, and the wood's in better shape when you're done. So in the same way, hierarchy is really good at some things and not so good at other things, but we treat it as if it's good at everything, use it for everything, and then complain about it, which from my point of view isn't fair to hierarchy, right? You shouldn't blame the hammer for being bad at driving screws.
Yes.
So my question is, great, what are the alternatives and when should you use hierarchy and when should you use something else? So those are the two main ways that I'm trying to make work work.
Yeah, that's excellent. That sounds like an amazing career and an amazing life to study all that.
Yeah, I get to travel around the world. I do public speaking to groups of business leaders. I have politicians who are clients, presidential candidates, heads of political parties, government ministers, CEOs, billionaires, heads of nonprofits. And I do a lot of work from my home here in Berkeley, and I do a lot of it like getting on planes and going halfway around the world to work with organizations. And I find my work very fulfilling, Chris, which is a good sign.
Yes, it is. So you have fulfilling work, you have a fulfilling life. What led you to study purpose and want to help others discover their purpose?
Yeah, it's I just had this flash of, I think the movie was it Catch 22? No, it wasn't Catch 22. It was I can't remember. It was some weird movie, and it was all these people going to an ophthalmologist convention, and they all were wearing glasses on the plane. I was like, well, of course. Why would you become an ophthalmologist if you had 20/20 vision? So, why would I do that? Because my work was not fulfilling, Chris. Because I was frustrated. I was working for Oracle. This was back in, what would this have been? This would have been in the early 90s, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I was working at Oracle, and I had worked my way up the ladder to where I was working for a guy who was working for Larry Ellison, so pretty high up the food chain. And I realized that he wasn't happier than I was. Mm-hmm. Had a bigger office, bigger title, made more money than I did, and he looked less happy than me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that's a problem. And it actually precipitated an early midlife crisis, right? 31 is young to have a midlife crisis.
Wow, you know? Okay. It is.
Now, these days, the millennials have quarter life crises, right? They like 22, 23, 24, live in their parents' basement. But back then, people were still having midlife crises at 45 and 50 and 55. And so I realized that I didn't really have an alternative way of making myself fulfilled other than climbing the corporate ladder. And if that wasn't going to work, I didn't know what to do instead. Mm. And it was that started me on a 10-year search for purpose that eventually led me to finding my purpose. And as part of my purpose, this isn't true of everyone, but as part of my purpose was finding other people's purposes,
nice.
Including a method for doing so, which has now been memorialized in the book True Purpose, which describes in detail how to go about finding your purpose.
Yes.
And it actually has a whole bunch of different methods. Most books about purpose have zero or one methods in this. 12.
Yeah.
And so that started me on a professional path of purpose as a service that I offer to people for money. Hmm. It's my day job.
That's amazing and fantastic. I mean, 12 ways to discover purpose. That's something that blew my mind when I was skimming the book table of contents. I'm like, you've discovered 12 ways. That's amazing. So what is purpose, and how can there be 12 ways to discover it?
Well, there's actually more than 12. I left out some of the ones that don't work that well that people usually use. So to me, purpose is an issue of meaning, right? Mm-hmm. If you lack purpose, then you lack meaning. If you have purpose, then you have meaning. Mm-hmm. And so that could be on a very small scale, like why are we having this conversation, Chris? Like, what's the purpose of this particular recording that's going to be sent out on the podcast? That would be a perfectly valid question. Right. Or what's the purpose of this meeting? Or what was your purpose in buying that particular model of car? Those are all valid questions,
yes. But
they're on a fairly small scale of meaning. In the context that we're talking about, we'd be asking, well, what's the purpose of your life or my life? Mm-hmm. Or what's the purpose of this organization that we're working in, mm-hmm. or perhaps consulting to as a professional helping it out with its purpose? So those are much bigger scale questions, and the mind just sort of kind of locks up when people start to think about that.
Yeah.
So when they ask, why am I here? Who am I? What's my purpose? Usually they get crickets in response, right? Nothing comes back.
Right.
Which leads to the first method, which is ask and wait, which is the method I use, right? No, that was how I found my purpose, ask and wait. Not a very efficient method, right? So I was saying that from that particular purpose crisis to when I found it, it was 10 years. It wasn't the first time I asked the question, but that was like when it got really serious for me. And, 10 years isn't bad. It could take much longer. So I don't recommend ask and wait as a method, but a lot of people do. Another one I don't recommend that's not in the book is trial and error, which is pick a career, try it, see if it feels fulfilling. If it doesn't, quit and go train to do something else.
Yeah.
Now, that absolutely works, but you have to work at it for like a couple of years, because very few things are deeply fulfilling the very first time you try them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you hand a kid a violin, they might be a future virtuoso who's going to rock the world with their awesome skills, but not the first time that bow hits the violin. Cover your ears. Right. So you have to work at it a little bit to see whether it really works or not. And so that could mean doing something for 2 to 5 or 10 years, deciding it's not your purpose, and then starting over, which is very inefficient.
Yeah.
Right? And some young people wind up doing that by default because they don't have another way of going about it.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
the two methods that are more accurate that most people use that actually work. One is a method where you look at your life history and ask yourself, well, when have I felt passionate and fulfilled and aligned? When were the times when, based on my experience, I was probably on purpose that day or week or month or second? And then see if you can find a pattern between those events. Now, that works really well. It doesn't take that long. It takes like an hour or two to do a really thorough job of it. But the purpose it yields is a little bit vague. Now, for some people, that's enough, right? They have a purpose statement that sounds like my purpose is to teach, or my purpose is to help people, or my purpose is to leave the earth a better place than I found it, or my purpose is to be a good role model or something like that. And if that's generates sufficient meaning for them, then my attitude is great. Congratulations, you have your answer. Go live your life. Count yourself lucky and die happy.
Yes.
And then there's other people where they need something more specific, right? Yes. They need something more detailed. And usually that's people either who are having a kind of a purpose crisis like I was, where they like wake up one day and don't know why their life is the way it is. Like, this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife, right? I mean, they're like, ah. Or they have some precipitating crisis, like a family member dies, or they get diagnosed with a disease, or they get laid off at age 54 or something like that. And now they really need to know.
Yeah.
And for those folks, that kind of very simple purpose statement usually isn't enough. And the other people for whom it's not enough are ones who are actively engaged in trying to change the world. So there's a subset of humanity who has a little voice in the back of their head telling them, it's your job to fix the planet. And I can see you smiling, Chris. You resemble this remark, right?
Might.
So these people I call change agents, right? They're watching the news and they're thinking, somebody got to do something about that. And a little voice in their head says, yeah, you. And for those people, they need a very specific purpose, because that purpose is their instructions for how to change the world, right? And what to change it into. And absent that, there's this sort of vague groping in the fog feeling of knowing there's something bigger they're supposed to be doing and not being able to identify it with sufficient clarity to take action on it.
Right? Yes.
And this ongoing sense of frustration that I'm not having enough impact. I know there's something more I'm supposed to be doing. What is it? I need to know. Ah! And that can go on indefinitely, that experience. So those are the two groups that, in my experience, need the more detailed purpose. And that one is trickier to get. The way that we use that, and this is very well outlined in the book True Purpose, is what you have to do is find something that already knows your purpose and can explain it to you. And it can't be another person.
Explain so, more. Wow.
Yeah. Right. So now comes this interesting question, well, who or what is that, Tim? Right. So it depends on your beliefs, right? So it could be internal, right? That my heart or my soul or my intuition knows my purpose, right? And you can call it anything you want, my purpose part, right? My inner compass. People come up with all kinds of my higher self. Or it could be external, it could be God or the universe or source or my guardian angel or my dead grandma or, you know, it doesn't matter, my spirit animal. It really doesn't matter. What matters is that you pick something that makes sense to you. And then the idea is you set up two-way communication with that thing, whatever it is, and ask it, what's my purpose? And it says, took you long enough. Glad you finally asked. It's this. And it explains it to you, right? And so that's the way to get the really detailed answers, to do it that way. The problem with that is, A, getting that communication working, and B, all the fears that people have about having that question answered in detail, right? So you actually have to not only learn how to communicate with such a thing, you also have to deal with the parts of yourself that don't want that communication to work because they don't want the responsibility or the pain in the ass of having the purpose clear. Like, things aren't that bad. Everything's fine. No need to rock the boat, right? We can do fine. Just, well, let's just keep seeking it. How about that? Let's not find it, but just keep seeking it. We know how to do that, right? And so you have to deal with the sense of lack of safety of having that question be answered, which is something that doesn't occur to people as a problem. But for most people, if you handed them with an envelope with their purpose in it, they would think twice before opening the envelope.
Yeah. Why is purpose not found in other people or being told by other people what your purpose is?
I mean, you could hire a psychic or a channeler or somebody like that. And if they're good, they might even get it right. And I've had that happen. Like I had one CEO hire me. We went through a whole process. And at the end, he goes, we got the purpose. And he said, that's funny. He says, a psychic reader told me that 5 years ago. It's like, then why did you hire me? And the answer is because it's too easy to disbelieve somebody else. Mm. Even if they got it right, how would you know that they got it right? Yeah. That's one problem. The other issue is that usually the people you would ask, who would be the people closest to you, would have a vested interest in the answer because maybe they want you the way they are. Maybe you finding your purpose might not work for them. Mm-hmm. Like, what if that's going to cause you to stop doing for them what you currently do for them? And a great example of this was my son when he was young. It's a smart kid. He figured out when he was just a few years old that daddy finds people's purpose for a living. And he said, Daddy, I know your purpose. And I said, oh, what is it? He says, to take care of me. Which is a perfect illustration of why the people closest to you may not be good, unbiased gauges of what your purpose is.
Interesting. All of what you've described, I think, sound like common struggles that people face when they think and try to find purpose. Is there anything missing in that struggle that people often have? Is it believing? Is it acting? Is it something?
Well, there's a whole bunch of other issues that come up when you know your purpose in terms of then acting on it. That brings up its own whole set of fears and resistance. Mm. But it's basically the similar issue, which is if I lived this purpose, think of all the terrible things that might happen, right? So maybe I better not. And the downside of that is that if you know your purpose and don't act on it, mm-hmm. there's no real benefit to that. Yeah. If anything, it becomes a tool you can use to beat yourself up for not doing it. So I'm a big fan of, using your purpose. In particular, a big fan of taking your purpose to work, back for the purpose of our conversation,
right.
Which is, if your purpose isn't integrated into your day job, that means that you're doing it in your copious spare time when you're not eating, sleeping, having relationships, working, and doing everything else, which doesn't leave that much time in our modern world, right? If we were hunter-gatherers, that might be a fair amount of time, but for us, it's not. And so that means it gets slipped in between the cracks, between all the other things that are competing for your attention and the other things, the other people and flashing phones and things like that are very good at competing for your attention.
Yes.
And so it's easy for years to go by with no action being taken on your purpose, which is why I think it's so important to take it into the workplace and integrate it into your job, whatever that job might be, because then you have 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, at least,
yes.
right, for most people, to spend manifesting your purpose. And then that's going to result in a lot more satisfaction and fulfillment than trying to do it in the cracks in between everything else.
Mm. So bringing purpose to work, right about now, someone out there is probably thinking, all this talk about purpose sounds great, but surely it doesn't pay the bills.
Well, it depends on what you do with it. It doesn't have to pay the bills, right? You could make it into an altruistic nonprofit type activity. And that's one of the things that people get confused by. They say, well, but if I follow my heart and do what I love, then I'll get the money, right? And the answer is maybe. I don't know. Are you charging for following your heart and doing or are you doing it for free? Because if you're doing it for free, the money's not going to follow, right? So you have to actually do the work to think about how's this going to work in practice. Mm-hmm. And the research says that if you do even a halfway decent job at that, it does pay the bills, right? So that purposeful people tend to earn more money, substantially more money. Companies that have a higher purpose substantially outperform companies that don't by a whole bunch of measures, including the bottom line. So the research says that if you integrate it effectively into your work, yeah, actually it does pay the bills. So here's an example, right? So if a product or service has a higher purpose built into it, mm-hmm. that's clear and obvious, right? It's not a secret. It's like written on the outside of the package. You can charge more for that product or service than if it doesn't. Here's two examples. And this is just, people picking stuff off shelves, right?
Yeah.
If you offer a person two products or two services of equivalent quality and equivalent price, they'll choose the one with the higher purpose, the one with the social benefit, 92% of the time.
Wow.
Now, offer them stuff of equivalent quality. One has a purpose, the one doesn't. And the one that has the purpose costs more. They'll still choose that one more than half the time.
Wow.
Right. And this is something that number has been going up. Right. For millennials, that's always been true. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of the population, now that number has been increasing and now it's over 50% for everybody.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, if you're a company, like, you're getting paid just to have a purpose and put it on the box. Right. Yes, that would be paying the bills. Yes. And that's not including the increased employee retention, right? Mm-hmm. Reduced turnover, the increased employee engagement, the higher productivity, all this other stuff that comes with being a purpose driven organization. And there's like, they're doing more research all the time and it keeps coming up with the same answers. Right. Mm. So it's like this magic bullet, this, you know, magic pill for a company to take to become more profitable.
Yeah. It also sounds like it's a great way of navigating the complex world that we live in. I mean, is purpose a compass?
That ideally, yeah. So one of the definitions of purpose is that this came from a CEO client of mine, a high tech CEO, is the path of maximum impact. Mm. So you think about that. So it's of the various choices I could make, which one or ones successively would create the greatest positive impact on everybody? Well, one of those everybody is going to be the shareholders, who are going to make more money, right? But the employees are going to be happier, right? The world's going to be better off. So if you're following that path of maximum impact, then things keep getting better for everybody. And that's not a navigational system people think of, right? Mm-hmm. The navigational system people think of for a company is, well, we have to come up with a strategy. Well, how do we come up with a strategy? Well, we come up with a strategy because we come up with a vision or a goal or something like that we basically pull out of our butt. And now, you know, so we want to grow by 20%, or we want to take over the world in this particular market or service or something like that we dreamed up in our offsite. And now we're going to go up with this very complex set of tasks and things that we're going to do, which basically rely on our ability to predict the future 5 years out and say, if we do this, this, and this, and this, and this move, it's like playing the chess game 10 moves ahead, right? If we do all this stuff now, then 5 years from now, we're going to have achieved that arbitrary goal. So there's a couple problems with that. One is the other players in the chessboard may not do what you're expecting them to do,
yes,
right? So all of your careful research and everything about what's going to happen in the market could be totally wrong. And now all the moves you planned are irrelevant and your $250,000 strategy document is an expensive paperweight, right? But even leaving that out, assuming it was all correct, the problem with a lot of strategies, they never get implemented because people don't care. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a well-known fact that strategies don't get implemented, right? Most of them never do. And there's all this complaining about that, both by business leaders and by strategy consultants who are feeling unfulfilled because their work product is not getting used. Mm-hmm. And why is that? And they go around and around, oh, not enough support from management and not a lack of this and da da da. And I'm like, no, 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 you guys don't understand. No one cares. That's why it's not getting implemented. The original goal you came up with was completely arbitrary. No one had any emotional attachment to it whatsoever. And now all the steps that you come out to achieve that goal, no one cares about them either. Hmm. So we've seen when you set a higher purpose and goals based on that higher purpose, we've seen crazy financial results in companies, like 1,200% growth in revenue in 3 years. Now, I challenge you to find any company that would be willing to write that down on their strategic plan. Our goal is to grow our revenue by 1,200% in the next 3 years. Right? And they didn't even write that down. They were just trying to manifest their purpose, and that's what happened.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Something that popped into my mind as you're talking about, you know, strategy often doesn't get implemented is that in the creative world, whether it's marketing or design agencies or marketing agencies, the popular thing that seems to be right now is learning how to sell strategy as along with your product. And as you're talking, I'm just like, surely wording it as strategy might not be the best approach to that if it doesn't get implemented in the long run.
Well, what's a strategy? A strategy is a strategy to achieve something, some result, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny, the way that people use strategy is if it's a standalone thing. It's not a standalone thing. A strategy is a strategy to get something to happen.
Yes.
What are you trying to get to happen? And more importantly, why? Hmm. Why do you want to grow by 20% in the next 5 years? Why do you want to get into this new market? Why do you want to offer this new service? And the problem is that the answer is usually in order to make more money. The problem with that, that's a perfectly valid purpose, right? And there are even like economists who say, well, that's the purpose of all companies is to make more money, right? You should be making a profit and giving that to your shareholders. That's your purpose.
Yes.
As a statement of sort of economic fact, that's perfectly valid. As a purpose that you would put on the door of your organization to tell people coming in, this is why we're here, and this is why we want you to work for us, and this is why we want you to work really hard, it's an absolute train wreck. I love to do this. When I'm talking to audiences of CEOs about this, and they say, well, shouldn't it just be about profit? I say, great. How many people on the planet Earth do you believe leapt out of bed early this morning and rushed to work early this morning to create more value for shareholders? Total number of human beings on planet Earth out of 7 billion, roughly how many? And the most common answer, which I get over 90% of the time, is zero. Not 0%, zero total.
Wow.
That's the CEO's prediction of how many people rushed to work early this morning to create more value for shareholders. Mm. So I'm like, okay, if that's how motivating that purpose is, perhaps we could do better. Because this is one of the purposes of the purpose. Mm-hmm. In some ways, you might say its primary purpose is to motivate a change in behavior, right? If having the purpose there doesn't cause anyone to do anything differently, why would we have one?
Right.
If it doesn't cause a change in behavior, we don't need it. Well, in order for it to cause a change in behavior, it would have to be inspiring. It would have to be motivating. People would have to care about it. They'd have to look at it and go, wow, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I want to do more of that. If that's what this company is up to, I'm in. And you know how we know for a fact that that works? Is nonprofits.
Yes.
Nonprofits can get people to give them money and to work for free because they're clear about their purpose.
Yes.
Right. And the for-profit company saying, no, we don't mess with any of that do-gooder stuff. We're just here to make money. They have to bribe people to come to work and be disengaged and watch the clock and do way less than their potential because their purpose sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, get a better purpose. Why do you want the nonprofits to have all the motivated people?
Right.
Do you not want motivated people? You say you do. Well, if you were serious, you'd get a higher purpose like a nonprofit does. You'd be seriously engaged in trying to change the world because then your employees and your customers would be getting out to push to try to help you make that happen.
Yeah. And why shouldn't for-profit companies have a purpose that motivates their employees?
There's no rule. There's no law. Right? It's so funny. We've created this completely arbitrary split in our minds and in regulations that say, oh, no, well, if you're trying to make the world a better place, that's a nonprofit. Go over there and get people to give you money. Don't do it as a profit generating activity that might actually be self-sustaining. Right. Do it in a way that requires donations. I'm like, no. Create a business that makes the world a better place as part of its business model. Hmm. Right. Where you doing what you do provides goods and services to customers who pay for them and makes the world a better place at the same time. Not two different activities, one activity, right? Really good example of that I love to use is fair trade coffee.
Mm, yes.
Right? Buy this coffee. It costs more than the other coffee that's right next to it that tastes the same. But when you buy this coffee, the farmer's kids will go to school and they'll have healthcare. Okay. Well, a certain percentage of people will spend that extra money on that fair trade coffee, right? It's the same business model, the same activity. It's all happening at the same time. They're not like doing something else, right? They're not like killing baby seals and then donating money to wildlife refuges as a separate thing, right? It's one activity.
Right. It sounds like purpose is really about the story that you tell. And the story that you believe in. And that sounds like a perfect transition into how is purpose used in marketing?
Yeah. So ideally, you use the purpose to market two ways. One is internally and the other is externally. Internally means that we want our employees to understand that they're not just here to make money. They are here to make money for themselves and for the company and for its shareholders. Absolutely true. And at the same time, they're also here to make the world a better place in this very specific way called our company purpose, right? And we really want them to be here helping us do that. If they're just punching the clock and doing their tasks at their desk, that's not preferable to us. In fact, in case of some companies, that's not even acceptable to us, right? And so you got to be clear. If you're working here, it's to help make this purpose happen. Right? Are we clear about that? Good. Okay. Yeah. If you do that effectively, you will get more motivated employees who will stay longer in their job, right? Less turnover, and will work harder at their job because they want the company to succeed at its purpose, because they want the world to be better in that particular way. So that's to the employee's benefit and the organization's benefit and the world's benefit to do it that way. That's the internal marketing.
Yes.
The external marketing is to say that to the rest of the world and say, hey, everybody, yeah, we make tires or jackets or sell divorce services, right? Or refuel ships or whatever it is that we do, right? We do graphic design for corporations so they have better websites. And we do that in such a way as to make the world a better place like this. Right. This is the better world we're trying to create. And here's how our product, our service, our business model, the people we hire, the way we do what we do contributes to creating that better world. So come work with us, buy our products and services if you need them. But we also want you to join with us in this purpose and in making the world a better place in this way. So now, just like with the Fair Trade coffee, when I give you money to do my graphic design or for my truck tires or to refuel my ship, I'm not only buying the fuel for the ship, I'm also contributing to creating a better world. This is a movement, and really started with the millennials, but it's spreading to everyone, is you think about voting with your dollars, right? Anytime I lay a dollar down on the counter for something, or I put my credit card number into a website, I'm voting. I'm voting that I want that particular company to continue to exist and to continue doing what it's doing. Well, what if I don't like what it's doing? Maybe I should take my dollars somewhere else. What if the company is making the world a better place? Oh, maybe I should spend my dollars there. Right. Now, if the product or service sucks, that's a different story. We're assuming that the company is competent at delivering what it's promising. Right? But assuming that that's true, then people will vote with their dollars and spend the dollars there. And they'll not. It's not just like this transaction, okay, now I have my can of soda. It's they start to feel like in partnership with the company, like a community, we're doing this together. And if the company does a good job of messaging externally, thank you for voting with your dollars. Thank you for being our customer. Here's what we're doing with the money you gave us. Here's how we're making the world a better place. And here's how else you can help. Separate and apart from giving us dollars, here's some other ways you can help with this purpose too. Now you create this whole family feel, this team feel. Now we're co-conspirators changing the world together. The fact that you're an employee and I'm a customer, that's just two different roles in this project team that's creating this better world. Right?
Wow.
Totally different feel than me convincing you that you'll get more sex or you'll be happier or you'll do this or you'll do whatever if you buy this product or service from me, right? Buy this beer and have this fast car or get laid or whatever it is, right? This is, there's this very kind of psychological manipulation that's built into most marketing and sales that's, you know, even if it's true, it's still a manipulation, right? And everyone knows it's going on. Like, I mean, I know when I'm watching an ad, I know what they're trying to do. It's not like a surprise or a mystery or anything. But people get inured to that stuff, right? They develop resistance to it. It's so funny. The way to tell that is to go watch an ad from like the 1940s or 50s on TV. And it's laughable how simple the psychology in the ad is, right? And you're just watching it going, oh my God, we were so naive. We were so young, you know, when that would have worked.
Yeah. It's like going back and watching Jim Henson and the, how he used the Muppets in the very beginning to, you know, advertise coffee. And he'd always work in his kind of explosion or whatever.
Right. So you watch that and you think, wow, that, you know, and so the marketing and the sales has to get more and more sophisticated because it's overcoming more sophisticated defenses in the consumer. But this is a completely different transaction. I'm inviting you to be part of a movement mm-hmm. that's creating a better planet. And if you don't want to create the planet I'm trying to create, that's okay. Go do it somewhere else. Or maybe just buy my coffee because you want my coffee and you don't care about the farmer. Whatever. That's fine. But ideally, you and I are working together, mm-hmm. you as customer and me as employee or company or whatever, doing these transactions in our joint effort to create a better world.
Yeah. It sounds like what you're describing is a lot of purpose management, purpose alignment of all sorts of different types of people. So you have the purpose of the organization, you have the purpose of the employee, you have the purpose of the shareholders, the purpose of the government, the purpose of the client, the purpose of the buyers, the purpose mm-hmm. of the farmers. I mean that's right. A lot of purpose to manage.
It is. And right now, most of those stakeholder groups have no idea what their purpose is. So it doesn't require that much management. Yeah. But as things evolve, as more and more people see how well this works, it's interesting. Once people work at a purpose-driven company like that, if they like it, it's very hard for them to work at another one that's not. Like it ruins them. So they can only do that again in the future, right? Fortunately, there's more and more purpose-driven companies every day for them to work at. But so what happens is, as we get more and more educated about this, right, eventually the transaction will look like this. Like, you come to my company as a potential employee, mm-hmm. and part of the interaction is saying, oh, okay, so what's your purpose in life? And you tell me what your purpose is, and here's the company's purpose. Let's look and see how much alignment there is there. You and I are working together to see, is this match going to work or not? Mm. And if it's not, maybe I would recommend the company down the street and say, you know, given your purpose, I think you should talk to these guys. Did you talk to them yet? You haven't? Oh, you totally have to talk to them. Their purpose is almost word for word the same as yours. They're doing something totally different from us, but check it out. They might have a role for you, right? And so it would look more like that. Now, would we care whether you had skills that we needed or not? Of course we would. Would we care that the amount of money we're willing to pay for you to do this work is something that you can live on? Sure, of course we would care about that. But we would also care about alignment of purpose and alignment of values and other things like that. And those are often what kill relationships between companies and employees, and also in mergers and acquisitions between mm-hmm. companies and companies. Mm-hmm. Those are highly destructive relationships through no one's fault, because they just don't know to check for alignment in those ways mm. before creating that relationship, and only find out later by trial and error when it doesn't work, which is expensive for both the employee and the company, to see, oh, wow, well, if we'd known that at the beginning, we would have known not to do this. Mm. But we didn't, because you don't know your purpose and we don't know ours. So how would we check?
Right. Wow. This is super fascinating to hear just all that goes into a statement like having a purpose. And the question that's kind of coming to mind is it's bringing in that second tier of what you do of hierarchies and understanding how businesses are structured. Mm-hmm. Does purpose thrive in some forms of companies, or is it killed in other types? I mean, how does purpose thrive in an organization?
Right. So it needs advocacy, right? Somebody has to be advocating for the purpose. Someone has to stand for it and remind people of the purpose and insist that it be used in decision making. Mm. Now, who it is who does that depends on how the organization is structured. So in a traditional hierarchy, that pretty much has to be the CEO or someone, you know, very close to the top of the pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be that you have a CEO and a president, and the president's that guy. That's how it was at Starbucks, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe it's the chairman or something. But it's got to be someone who's got a lot of hierarchical clout being the torchbearer, the standard bearer for that purpose, right? Now, in a hierarchy, part of the risk here is that if that person gets hit by a truck, now the company is at a huge amount of risk, mm-hmm. right? Or the CEO retires and you replace the CEO with another CEO who's highly skilled, great pedigree, and doesn't know his own purpose and doesn't care about the company's purpose, right? Game over. Yeah. Relative to being a purposeful company. I'm actually doing work with Alibaba. I was out in China in the fall, working with high-level HR folks there. And one of the things I told them is Jack Ma, who's a super purposeful guy, is now retiring, mm-hmm. and they've got their CFO taking over as mm-hmm. head of the company. And I'm like, okay, that's, unless he's a super purposeful CFO, that's going to be really dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? CFOs aren't normally selected for their ability to advocate for a purpose. That's not a criterion in most companies. Maybe this guy's different. That would be great, right? But it's very dangerous. And what we see there is the risk of having the purpose be owned by one person. Right. Mm. Similar thing at Apple. The difference between Jack Ma and Apple is I don't think Steve Jobs ever articulated Apple's purpose. Mm-hmm. Right. He radiated it. He oozed it out of his pores. But I don't think he knew what it was. And I don't think he ever said what it was. Mm-hmm. Not at the level of clarity that, you know, would justify what occurred at Apple. Mm-hmm. And now with him gone, it's like, OK, this other poor bastard's trying to be the good luck, you know.
Exactly.
So that's the risk in a hierarchical organization. So yeah. In Holacracy or the collaborative operating system or most of these other, what they're called like self-organizing or non-hierarchical systems, mm-hmm. in pretty much every one of them that I've ever seen, a higher purpose is mandatory as part of the system. Like if you don't have a higher purpose, you haven't implemented the system correctly. Hierarchy is actually the only system where it's optional. And so in those cases, that has to be found and articulated and promulgated, and everybody has to be super clear on what it is, or we don't expect the system to work. Mm. That's how important it is.
Wow. This is amazing. As I'm thinking about all this going on, a question's coming to mind is, how do you force yourself, how do you help people think bigger? Because mm-hmm. I think when we think about purpose, that's so easy to lower the bar so yep. that it's just easy to step over. But as you're describing this world of purpose, I feel the bar raising higher and higher, as it should. As yes. it should. And so
that's right. It makes people nervous.
People?
Yeah. So there's a really good purpose should make you nervous. It should make you cringe. This is when we're finding the purpose of an organization. This is how I know it worked, is when everyone kind of stares at it and goes, holy crap, how on earth are we going to do that?
Yeah.
Right. When they say that, I'm like, there, got it. That's it. That's the purpose. Because they wouldn't be asking the question if A, it weren't accurate, and B, it weren't aspirational. It weren't a challenge, right? So purpose is necessarily about the future. And interestingly, it's not just about the future world you're trying to create. It's about who you as an individual, in the case of your purpose, mm-hmm. or who you as a company would have to become in order to be able to create that world. So people often feel like they look at their purpose and say, I can't do that. That's correct. You can't. Part of your job is to become someone who could.
Ooh.
So purpose is always aspirational if it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so it should be inspiring and scary at the same time. If it's not inspiring and scary at the same time, you probably haven't set the bar high enough.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do. They want to water it down a little bit so it's something I can conceive of achieving. If you do that, the inspirational quality will go away. And now it won't be motivating.
Yeah. So what do you need? What do organizations need to be held accountable to that purpose?
Yeah, it's actually very hard for individuals or organizations to hold themselves accountable to it because life is full of so many distractions. There's so many things competing for our attention, right? All these flashing lights and you know, ringtones and computers and things going off, emails coming in, just constant interrupts coming into our sphere saying, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. Oh, look what your friend did on social media. Oh, look, so-and-so got a promotion on LinkedIn. Go congratulate them. You know, this kind of thing is just constantly going on. And those things are designed, like they're hacking your brain. They're designed to trigger certain hormones in your brain so that you will feel compelled to spend time surfing the web or looking through Facebook or doing this kind of stuff, and like, oh, look, and there, then the cat video leads to this other thing, and pretty soon a half hour has gone by, right? It's all designed to do that. They want your eyes on the screen. So in the face of that, the purpose, which is aspirational, high level, challenging, about the future, right, requires you to grow and develop, boy, it just gets erased so quickly. Right. Within seconds, poof, it's gone. Mm-hmm. Right. By all this other more urgent and far less important stuff.
Yes.
And so what that means is you need somebody breathing down your neck saying, what have you done about your purpose so far this week? Oh, good. And what are you going to do about it next week? And then to call you the next week and say, okay, did it happen? Yes or no? And there's a very small number of people in organizations who can function without that, a couple of percent. Right? Wow. And the way you can tell in the case of a person is you ask them, say, when you make a commitment to yourself and tell no one else that you made that commitment, what are the odds that you keep it on average? There's a very small number of people, I'm not one of them, for whom the answer is very close to 100%. Right? These are very self-monitoring, self-managing people who are used to making a commitment to themselves, writing it down, and absolutely doing it.
Yes.
Right? My word is law. When I say it's going to happen, it's going to happen, even if I'm the only one who knows. Those people can do it alone. The rest of us, me included, the rest of us need somebody else looking over their shoulder saying, did you do it or not? Yeah. You didn't? When are you going to do it? So the odds for any given individual organization, optimistically, 3%, based on my highly non-scientific survey of thousands of people and organizations.
Well, Tim, this has been an amazing conversation about purpose, about organization, hierarchy, but I'm just blown away with what you've brought to this podcast episode today. Thank you. The final question that I have for you is this. Mm-hmm. What was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
I think it was one I watched yesterday. It was about the human biome. It's about the bacteria in our guts. Interconnected. That's the name of it. It's like a video podcast series called Interconnected. It was made by a colleague and client of mine. And it's all about how our health is regulated more than almost anything else by the bacteria that live in our body, which outnumber our human cells. I think it's 10 to 1. And they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Like if every bacterium in your body died, you would probably be dead within a couple days.
Wow. Brings a whole new meaning to, you know, gut reaction.
That was good. That was quick. Yeah. It's interesting. A friend of mine, I do all this. Part of what the reason I'm so interested in that is I do a lot of fermentation. Like I make my own beer and kefir and kombucha and bean paste and pickled beets and sauerkraut and everything. I have sake. I've got everything. I spend so much time and energy on it. It must be purposeful.
Yeah.
Right. And what's the relationship between that and like helping people find their purpose or creating non-hierarchical systems? Like I couldn't find it. And a friend of mine, a guy named by the name of Jeffrey Van Dyke, who's very good with purpose, said, hey, Tim, he says, I figured it out. I figured out why fermentation is purposeful for you. And I said, really? I've been dying to know. Why is it? He said, creating networks of change agents. And I was like, that's it. That's it. The bacteria are collaborative networks of change agents creating transformation.
Yeah.
That's purposeful.
That's awesome. Everything's connected.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. So where can people learn more about you and the work that you do?
They can go to newparadigmgloballeader.com to learn about me as a consultant, a speaker, executive coach. If they want to learn how to find their client's purpose, right? Perhaps they offer marketing or consulting services or something like that, and helping either individuals or organizations find their purpose might be useful and purposeful for them. They can go to truepurposeinstitute.com. That's the place where we train practitioners in purpose methodologies.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It's been an absolute blast, and I can't wait to share this episode with the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. This has been delightful.
As we come to the end of this episode of Getting Work to Work, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with other creative entrepreneurs, leaders, and curiosity builders? You can send them to gwtw.co to access every episode of the show, or you can have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Do you have a big idea you're chasing or want to share about how you're growing in your creative work? Perhaps you need some advice, encouragement, or just want someone to say hi to, drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at CM Studios. Not only do I love talking about curiosity, but I like writing about it too. And I want to let you know that I just launched a new email series for creative entrepreneurs who might be struggling with burnout, conformity, and mediocrity. It's called The Curiosity Killers. Each day focuses on one killer and provides a few steps you can take to build your curiosity through wonder, learning, and action. Head to curiositykillers.com to sign up for this fun and serious look at why curiosity matters. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.